Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Cassiopea Pharmaceuticals Full Year 2019 Results and 2020 Outlook Conference Call. I am Sandra, the Chorus Call operator. The conference must not be recorded for publication or broadcast. At this time, it's my pleasure to hand over to the management team of Cassiopea Pharmaceuticals, Ms. Diana Harbott. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator, and thanks all for joining our call today. We especially thank you for joining the call amid the coronavirus situation, and we wish you and your families safety and peace during this time. Meanwhile, activities continue at Cassiopea, although we're all working from home. Today, I am joined by Chris Tanner, our CFO, Luigi Morro, our CSO, Alessandro Mazzetti, our Chief Medical Officer, and Marco Lecchi, our Finance Director. Our agenda here is on slide three. We'll be reviewing the 2019 financial results, providing a product development and a commercial update, and talk a little bit about our financing plans going forward. With that being said, I will turn it over to Chris Tanner to give you an overview of our consolidated financial results for 2019.
Thank you, Diana. Well, you know, the financial numbers are still pretty simple. Our operating result is driven by expenses only since we had no revenues, or went down slightly from 2018, primarily because our clinical trial expense declined because of the levels of our clinical trials, in the sense that last in 2019, we had very low costs on the clascoterone cream side, and we were completing the phase II dose-ranging trial for alopecia in males, and had not started the trial for females yet. There's a lull from that perspective, so those costs went down. What went up above the levels of the years before was the SG&A by 100%, practically, primarily because of the pre-commercial activities that we undertook in the U.S. to explore the potential of clascoterone cream 1%, and Diana will tell you more about this in greater detail later on. I think if we go on to the next page, I think if you see from a staffing perspective, we're still a very small company with 12 people, and we still have a very close relationship with Cosmo, with the service agreement, which continues working well. If we then move on to, basically, I can jump all the minor costs. I think it doesn't really make sense to go through these from that perspective. If we go, and importantly, to the consolidated statement of financial position, which is on page nine, on page 12, then you will notice that our equity has declined from 14.5 million to 3.7 million. This, during the course of the year now, requires that we recapitalize the company because according to Italian law, we're not allowed to have negative equity. During the first part of the year, we've, of course, had continued expenses, all the more since the phase II dose-ranging trial or proof of concept trial of the clascoterone lotion solution in females is ongoing. That brings us to the cash flow statement. From a cash flow perspective, I'm now looking at page 16. We had slightly lower than last year cash flow from operating or cash drain from operating activities of 11.4 million euro, which, as indicated before, led to the equity position that we have. Fortunately, we've had the support of Cosmo, who's provided all the credit facilities that we require. In essence, there's no liquidity issue in the company. It is just from a formal perspective that we have the equity issue that we need to resolve, and I'll talk about that later on. I think we can now move on to the product development update, Diana.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. On slide 18, you see our pipeline depicted. Many of you are familiar with this. Just a quick overview. Our clascoterone cream 1% is in the FDA at the moment, and we'll talk a little bit about that further with the PDUFA date of August 27th, 2020. This is the first new mechanism of action for the treatment of acne in nearly 40 years. We also have clascoterone in a solution form for androgenetic alopecia in males and separately in androgenetic alopecia in females. And in males, we completed our phase two, and we are in the midst of submitting a special protocol assessment to the FDA prior to beginning our phase three program, and we'll talk a little bit about that in the future here on the next couple of slides. And we are in the midst of a phase two study in androgenetic alopecia in females. Our other two products, which we won't spend much time on today, are both novel products. One's a topical antibiotic for acne. The other is a novel immunomodulator for genital warts, and both of these products had positive phase two results, and we are conducting some product development activities. We will expect to move these products forward after our NDA for acne is approved. Now, to give you a little more detail on both clascoterone cream and clascoterone solution, there were a substantial amount of activities in 2019, and so I thought I'd share with you some detail on both of these programs. So I'm starting on slide 19 here. We received conditional approval from the FDA on the Winlevi trademark or proprietary name for our clascoterone cream for acne. We filed our NDA in August, and it was subsequently accepted by FDA, and the PDUFA date of August 27th, 2020 was established. Importantly, we had an extensive medical affairs program that has substantially increased the visibility of not only the company, but importantly, our drug clascoterone in the dermatology community. You see here there were over 20 published papers, posters, and abstracts done with this product. We sponsored over 24 meetings, and there were over 55 podium mentions of clascoterone cream 1% by key opinion leaders at major dermatology meetings. This means now that thousands and thousands of dermatologists and nurse practitioners are aware of not only clascoterone, but the company and our clinical data. We held two acne advisory boards this year, and we completed some very extensive market research with payers or insurers, and we've done substantial segmentation research with healthcare providers. And what I mean when I say healthcare providers, that is with doctors and nurse practitioners and physician's assistants who work inside dermatology offices, who write prescriptions for acne products. And I'll be telling you more about that in the next coming slides. And, of course, the big next step for clascoterone cream 1% is the PDUFA date here at the end of the summer. In terms of clascoterone solution, earlier last year, we announced the results of our phase two dose-ranging studies in males. And we identified the most effective dose, which is the 7.5% BID. This, too, product had a very extensive medical affairs program that also increased the visibility of clascoterone solution in the derm community. You can see here the numbers of published papers, posters, abstracts, podium presentations. We held three advisory boards this year regarding the solution, certainly to help us really tease out the important aspects of our phase two data, but also to design the important phase three program for clascoterone solution in males, and also to prepare for the initiation of the phase two studies in females. We'll tell you more here about how that study is ongoing, but the study was initiated late last year, and enrollment has been ongoing. We also had an end-of-phase 2 meeting with FDA in November to discuss the phase 2 results for androgenetic alopecia. And as we look forward to this year, we will finalize this special protocol assessment for the phase 3 program with FDA. It's very clear to us they have not seen a phase 3 program for androgenetic alopecia in a couple of decades. And we think it's very important to reach agreement with FDA on the elements of the protocol. So we will be doing that prior to the initiation of that phase 3 program. It's likely that this may take 2 rounds, we're estimating. So you will see that we will initiate those activities for the Breezula phase 3 trials in males towards the end of the year. And we think we'll begin recruitment in the first quarter of 2021. Now I will turn it over to our Chief Medical Officer, Alessandro Mazzetti, to give you an update on the clascoterone phase 2 clinical study for androgenetic alopecia in females on slide 21.
Thanks, Diana. As Diana told, the phase 2 alopecia trial in women started last December. The study was planned in the moment in 6 centers in Germany and is a double-blind, multi-center, prospective randomized trial in which we compare the our clascoterone in two different solutions, concentration 5% and 7.5% twice a day against vehicle and minoxidil solution 2%, that is the solution approved in women for minoxidil. The study is planned in 280 subjects split in the 4 groups. So at the end, we will have 70 subjects per group. The treatment is planned for 6 months. At the moment, we have already enrolled 109 subjects, and we hope to be able to complete the enrollment by the end of the second quarter, by June this year, to complete the clinical phase of the trial at the end of the year. Of course, also for this trial, as for all the trials now ongoing in the pharma industries, the corona situation could have some impact in the enrollment of the subject. At the moment, this is the situation for this trial.
Thanks, Alessandro. Now I'll move on to giving you a commercial update for both clascoterone cream 1% and clascoterone solution. On slide 23, what you can see that we've learned some very, very key market insights about clascoterone cream this year, and also regarding its positioning in the acne marketplace. We conducted substantial market research this year, and this slide gives you what I would call the very key points when looking at clascoterone cream 1%. First of all, the acne market continues to be a very important market in the U.S. Dermatology space. This is a very high volume, concentrated target market with just over 8,000 doctors, nurse practitioners, and physician's assistants, that's what I call providers, accounting for almost 60% of prescriptions. That means that with a highly targeted sales force, we can cover the entire key universe of providers that generate the majority of prescriptions with about 75 sales reps. We also clearly understand that there's an unmet need among doctors for a novel approach for treating acne, especially targeting the hormonal aspect for all acne patients. There is no FDA-approved topical product that has ever been approved for the treatment of this hormonal aspect of acne, but doctors use off-label an oral antiandrogen called spironolactone, which is a potassium-sparing diuretic that's never been approved for acne, and it's used off-label, though, for acne in females. It is the third highest prescribed drug in all of the dermatology space for any indication, generating nearly 2 million prescriptions a year. The use of this drug is a very important piece of evidence of the importance of a novel approach for treating acne, which targets this hormonal aspect. Acne is treated with polypharmacy in the United States per the AAD guidelines. That is, the doctors use a multiple product approach of complementary drugs to address different parts of the disease. So in the U.S., that's the reason why the average acne patient leaves the doctor's office with two or three prescriptions. And also, I'll tell you about here in just a moment the details of our market research, but it clearly demonstrates that the potential positioning for clascoterone cream 1%, which is around this very unique mechanism of action, and we understand clearly that doctors are predicting a significant market share uptake of prescriptions, especially among the high volume and high value providers. If we move to slide 24, some of you may be familiar with a slide I've used in the past, which depicts in a very concise way the acne market in the United States. There's 50 million acne sufferers, and it continues to be a very relevant disease in the dermatology space. It's a $5 billion U.S. market, but interestingly enough, treatment options are limited to therapies that were developed over 40 years ago. All of the recent drugs in the last four decades have actually been drugs that address the same mechanisms of actions that were approved these numbers of decades ago. And what we understand is that the topical options tend to address only three of the four factors in acne physiology, which means there's a gap in the treatment regimen for a topical antiandrogen. And our research with payers, or that means insurers in the United States, continue to show that they will plan to cover acne as a medical condition. And our research indicates that this will not change. That is, our research indicates that this will still continue to be a covered or prescription marketplace. And clearly, 90% of the branded prescriptions for acne are written in the dermatology office. But interestingly enough, dermatology physician's assistants or nurse practitioners account for almost $1 billion of the $5 billion written in the United States. And these PAs and NPs reside inside the dermatologist's office. Moving on to slide 25, this bubble slide I have here clearly elucidates that our market research confirms that clascoterone can be positioned as a foundation for acne treatment. And what I mean when I say foundation is that these doctors indicate that all acne has a hormonal component. It's just a matter of to what extent. So as you can see in the middle bubble, this dermatologist is saying if product X, which in this case is the clascoterone cream, treats the hormone aspect of acne, and it can work on both male and females, then all patients should be on it, like a retinoid. So clearly, we're seeing that our drug is a first-in-class topical androgen receptor inhibitor, and this is resonating not only with physicians, but when I get down to the payers, you'll see it also resonates with the insurers. And that almost all physicians surveyed agreed that there is a need for a topical treatment for acne that is triggered by hormones. And so subsequently, overall, these physicians reported a very high preference share or high use of the drug that was driven primarily by its new MOA. And 90% of the healthcare providers exposed to clascoterone cream, 1%, said they would be extremely likely to prescribe the product. Slide number 26 gives you a view of several topical acne products and what their year one prescription volume and peak prescription volume was. And our market research confirms that the interest in clascoterone cream is similar to Epiduo and Axone. So if you take a look at Epiduo, for example, and Axone, those two drugs generated between 369,000 prescriptions and nearly 550,000 prescriptions in its first year on the market. And in more detail on the right side of that slide, you'll see that, again, they rated clascoterone very similar to products like Adapalene and Axone from an efficacy perspective because of its clinical results in both in inflammatory lesion, and especially interesting, they were very impressed with the long-term efficacy that clascoterone cream 1% shows, especially in truncal acne. And as far as tolerability or safety, they rated clascoterone the highest of all the products, given that it has such a very positive tolerability profile and a very small rate of discontinuation in our phase 3 trials. And healthcare providers also saw value of our drug in also in moderate patients so that they can target both the inflammation and the hormonal component of acne in these patients. And just a reminder, our NDA was submitted for acne vulgaris in the ages 9 and up, regardless of severity. Moving on to slide 27, it gives you a view for what the typical acne brand prices are in the United States for mostly topical and then one oral drug. And you can see that these brand prices range from $500 to $900 per month. And this is the wholesale acquisition cost of these drugs. And that the average WAC, we call it, for a topical acne product is $613 per month. And the newest topical brands that have been launched in the last 6 months, Aklief and Amzeeq, have priced their drugs at $554 and $485 WAC per month, while Seysara, an oral antibiotic, is priced at $911 per month WAC. So that gives you a view of the market research we've done and some of the launch surrogates as it relates to the acne market in the U.S. and the response to clascoterone cream 1%. Now I'm going to move on to just a single slide here on some of the key insights we have received regarding the market access or payer insights with clascoterone cream 1% and the expected coverage that we expect the product to have based on substantial research that was done last summer with payers that represent 92 million commercial lives in the United States. So first of all, we start with how do payers look at this acne market generally? And what we understand clearly is that it's a very stable market for them, and it's a very predictable market. It's not a market that they manage aggressively because it represents it doesn't represent a very high dollar volume compared to other therapeutic classes that they manage. So they tend to manage the product consistent, differently, but without major category evaluations. Also, our market research confirms that payers will continue to treat acne as a medical disease and will provide coverage for patient acne visits and products. So, what always is important, it always comes up with any payer research that we do, and I'm sure for any therapeutic class, price is always a key driver of the decision for the level of coverage. But innovation and our new MOA does matter. We clearly understand that a price threshold of over $600 WAC per month may have higher restrictions. Of course, we are not planning to price above that. And we understand clearly that clascoterone will be important to be classified as a first-in-class androgen receptor inhibitor, creating a new category so we won't be price-compared against other products. Based on our research, we are expecting that we'll have coverage, formulary coverage, in at least 70% of the commercial lives in the United States without highly restrictive prior authorizations or with multiple step edits, as long as we price less than 400 net price per month. So this gives us a very clear indication of what the pricing and the coverage will be expected for clascoterone cream 1%. And of course, the market research we did with healthcare providers gives us a very clear understanding of what sort of market share and prescription volume we might have. Now, just to give a little commercial update on androgenetic alopecia, I thought I would just share two slides with you here. First of all, I'm now on slide 31. If you take a look at the U.S. androgenetic alopecia market, or AGA, what androgenetic alopecia is pattern baldness in men, and it's very quite common. There's 80 to 95 million Americans that suffer from androgenetic alopecia, but both men and women are impacted. That market is likely 60% men and 40% females. But interestingly enough, only a very small portion of these patients, 4 to 9 million of them, are estimated to get treatment. And this is definitely thought to be caused by the lack of treatment options available for these patients. And the only two treatment options that are available, that is minoxidil and finasteride, were approved 20 and 30 years ago. Now, when we talk a little bit about what is androgenetic alopecia, it is actually characterized by this progressive loss of hair on the scalp in a very characteristic pattern, and it's actually caused by high concentrations of an androgen, dihydrotestosterone, or DHT, which at the hair follicle shortens the hair growth cycle. And so we understand very clearly that our drug has a direct impact as an androgen receptor inhibitor at the very cause of androgenetic alopecia, which is the high concentrations of DHT. Now, there are very known psychosocial complications of AGA that include depression, low self-esteem, less frequent enjoyable social engagement. And this is clearly depicted by the number of emails that are received by us each week from patients begging to be in our trials. And we have clearly understand that women are actually more likely to suffer from these psychological complications than men, clearly because beautiful, thick hair is a sign of beauty. Now, moving on to research that was done with both doctors and patients, we understand that both these groups are excited about clascoterone solution for AGA. Doctors were very highly receptive to our product profile, and they really did tease out this novel mechanism and this impressive clinical photograph that they saw of actual patients who had been on drug. All physicians' specialties that were tested suggest a very high utilization, with a reported adoption of over 60% of their male patients and 50% of their female patients. They would prescribe clascoterone solution. They also reported very high adoption rates generally, and they would replace finasteride and minoxidil equally. You can see here a quote on the dermatologist on the side here. I'm so excited about Breezula. We haven't had anything innovative in a long time. And furthermore, I have never been able to give my female patients something that could really fix their issue. This product could give a bit of hope to female alopecia patients. And we also tested the product profile with consumers, that is, with patients that had been on Rogaine. And these Rogaine patients indicated that they would at least be highly likely to request clascoterone solution from their physician. And they would be willing to pay between $1 and $200 per month for clascoterone solution, which is consistent with other cash pay lifestyle drugs. So with that, I will now turn the call over to Chris Tanner, who will give you a financing update.
Thank you, Diana. As I mentioned initially, just to remind you, of course, that Cassiopeia is an Italian company, and Italian law doesn't allow companies to operate with negative equity. As a consequence, we need to do what we call an equity bridge. Originally, to be very honest, of course, we had planned when we capitalized the company prior to IPO that the money that the company had would be lasting through PDUFA. But this was 4 years ago, and there's been slippage in time here and there. So now, unfortunately, we are getting close to negative equity 3 to 4 months before PDUFA, which forces us to make a small capital increase, because the original plan would have been to make the next equity round after we've gotten positive news from the FDA. So this will be a small transaction, which is estimated to be around 20 million euro. We're preparing the prospectus for a rights offering to all shareholders, which should be executed in May, because you probably know better than me that present moment is a terrible moment to be coming to the market. But we're also in discussions with potential investors who maybe step in with the exclusion of the preemption rights of other shareholders in the event that the shareholders that have the preemption rights do not want, for whatever reason, to participate. So we have the choice between two different alternatives, and the dependence of what we do will depend on market conditions. Importantly, Cosmo has stated that it will fully underwrite any rights issue up to 20 million and will provide additional financing if needed. So from that perspective, I think we can be very comfortable and very assured that we're going to be raising the money. The question is just in which way precisely. We are furthermore exploring non-dilutive financing. Maybe non-dilutive financing is financing that has an equity-type component, because it's results-driven. It's normally subsumated under royalty financing, with the financing party being paid in proportion of royalties. But of course, this is not equity, so there's not a dilution component. So we're talking to a number of parties about this, and depending, of course, on conditions, we could close on those. Then, of course, the plan is, upon approval of clascoterone cream 1%, if Cassiopeia decides to commercialize the asset by itself in absence of a strategic transaction, that we will then do a more significant equity raise to advance the pipeline and to establish the commercial organization in the U.S., and that would be happening towards the end of the year or the very beginning of next year.
Thank you, Chris. And I'm going to jump back to slide 29 to just describe our approach to launch of clascoterone. I'm sure that's a question many of you have on your mind. And for those of you I've met over the years, you understand that we have adopted a very stepwise, diligent approach to the launch. and the investment related to the launch. And our view really is we think it makes most sense from an efficient market perspective to execute a strategic transaction, especially with a company that might have existing derm sales and commercial infrastructure to launch Clascoterone Cream 1%. You see, we see this product, which is the first new MOA in acne in nearly 40 years, in our pipeline, would substantially contribute to a company securing a very sustainable leadership position in the derm space. So talks are ongoing with multiple parties that would be acquirers of Cassiopeia or merger partners. But clearly, if a potential transaction is not attractive to our shareholders, then we will proceed with plans to launch launch Clascoterone following FDA approval. And so on this slide gives you a sense for our thinking in this regard. We have built a U.S. management team that has extensive derm experience in over 20 dermatology launches. We built a very solid foundation for launch. First, our medical affairs program, which I alluded to previously, has rapidly increased awareness of Clascoterone, new mechanism of action, and our clinical data in the dermatology community. We've also conducted market research that I just went through with you, where we clearly understand the positioning, the messaging, and the market segmentation, which is, of course, the doctors that would need to be called on in order to impact the uptake of the product. We also conducted substantial market research with payers or insurers. We understand clearly the value proposition of our product and how they would view our product and how they would price it or how we would price it in order to achieve attractive formulary coverage in 70% of the commercial lives in the United States. And we have used our professional relations to build Cassiopeia awareness among doctors who write large numbers of acne prescriptions. We've also identified areas of what I call external or contract support rather than planning to build these internally. So we will intend, if we launch this product, to launch with a contract sales organization of about 75 reps. Of course, we'll refine that number as the time gets closer. That allows us to use contract sales organizations who hire more reps in the U.S. than any other company and use their operational efficiency to rapidly and efficiently build our sales force post PDUFA so that we could be launching months later. While, of course, these contract sales professionals will carry a Cassiopeia card, and to the doctor and to most of the industry, it won't be apparent that they are a contract sales organization. But to be clear, they will be specifically recruited and will promote our drug and not be promoting drugs of other companies. So our plan is to launch in a two-step launch approach. We'll do a market access launch following the PDUFA date. That is, we'll begin our contracting discussions with insurers or payers here in the U.S. to start moving through some of the six-month payer blocks and resolving as much as possible the formulary issues so that that is taken care of as much as possible before our sales reps enter the doctor's office in approximately March of 2021. So that gives you a little bit better feel of our approach to the launch of Clascoterone Cream 1%. Now to wrap it up, I'm going to move here to slide 35, just highlighting a few of the company milestones. As Chris mentioned, we'll be doing a capital increase here in the coming months. We'll be finalizing the special protocol assessment with FDA on the phase 3 program for Clascoterone Solution phase 3 in men, where we'll be initiating the activities at the end of the year and likely beginning recruitment the following year. And we'll be looking forward to the Clascoterone Cream 1% PDUFA date here at the end of the summer on August 27th, 2020. So that completes our prepared remarks. If there's any questions, we'd be happy to take them.
The first question comes from Bob Pooler from Valuation Lab. Please go ahead.
Hi, Diana. Gentlemen, first of all, congratulations on an excellent 2019 with all the positive developments for both Winlevi and Breezula. A few questions, if I may. First of all, could you provide maybe some guidance on your operating expenses in 2020? I know there's a lot of moving parts, but could you maybe provide a range for 2020?
Chris?
You're talking a range of 2020 from a value, from a cost perspective?
From a cost perspective, yeah, what your operating expenses could be somewhere in 2020.
Well, in principle, what you can, looking at it from a very shooting from the hip perspective, first mm-hmm. of all, you have to be aware that in the past, we've always driven the entire R&D based on the cash and the equity that was available. So if we raise 20 million, mm-hmm. let's assume that we raise 20 million equity this year and we plan then to do a second capital raising at the very end of the year or at the beginning of next year, then you can assume that the entire cost for this year is going to be in the vicinity more or less of what we had last year, maybe a bit more, because after the approval, we will be doing intensifying our pre-commercial activities, but I think our overall expenses are going to be around 15, 16, 17 million to that tune.
Okay, that's quite.
To be clear, Bob, remember the substantial expenses that would be related to a sales force will be incurred in 2021.
Yeah, because you'll hire just shortly on commercial launch.
Right, so we're going to work through the payer launch first, mm-hmm. and then those reps would be hired in the year 2021.
Yeah, and you did already a lot of market access programs last year, so that cost is already incurred as well. So, clear. Just on Breezula, the phase 3 trial, maybe a little bit more color there. I know you're in discussions on the SPA. Any idea about the duration, maybe also the cost there as well, and when you would expect to have results from that?
Alessandro?
Yes. For the phase 3 alopecia trial, our plan is to start the preparation activities by the end of this year, while for the enrollment for the clinical trial activities, we plan to have them during the 2021 and 2022. Because FDA during the end of phase 2 meeting asked to have one part of the trial as double blind, the first part, the first 6 months, and afterwards 6 months follow up for safety reason. So we do hope to complete all the trial before the end of the 2022. As far as concerning the cost, at the moment we can plan a cost ranging between 25 millions overall, because as you know, FDA is requiring two phase 3 trials. So all of them should be cost roughly between 20 and 25 million.
Okay, thank you. Very clear. on the COVID-19, are there any constraints for your side, for instance, manufacturing supply constraints for the studies? or is it more external factors that would lead to delays, potential delays?
Do you mean the delay for the preparation?
Well, just on the coronavirus, are there any potential delays from your side? So, you know, with the enrollment to CROs, of course, patients not showing up or not able, that's outside your, but let's say from a manufacturer, you have supply for clinical trials, everything there from your side will not be affected.
For the phase three, I think we will not have any delay for the manufacturing and for the trial, because the plan is to start for the clinical part at the beginning of the next year. So I don't think for that moment the problems related to coronavirus.
Okay. And then just the final on, you stated there that Cosmos will fully underwrite the rights issue up to $20 million and provide additional funding if needed. Are there any restrictions from the Cosmos side that would increase their share? From Cosmos side, I think it's looking at the value of the company and also, you know, close to an approval, the risk-reward is quite high too. I understand that they would also willing to fully underwrite it as well. So anything there on restrictions from Cosmos side? Or?
No. Cosmos has said, Cosmos now is 45%, and we're talking about, right, a small transaction, right? It depends, of course, on what the share price is, right?
Yeah.
But if we would be lucky enough or whatever to have a share price going back up normal, then $20 million can be raised with 500,000, 600,000 shares. And that is, even if we would be the sole underwriter, writer, it would be to the tune of 5-6%, right?
Yeah.
But that's but Cosmo is willing to underwrite the entire exercise. Or will. Okay. It's not willing. It will.
It will. Yes, will.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's a backstop.
Thank you.
Right? That's a backstop in the event that other parties don't participate. I would hope that other investors consider the current price to be highly attractive as well, and that they would participate in the transaction equally.
Yeah, it seems to me like an opportunity. Well, thank you for answering the questions. Stay safe and healthy, and fingers crossed for your first product approval in 2020.
Thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Raghuram Selvaraju from H.C. Wainwright. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. This is Edward Marks on for Ram. I appreciate you guys taking the questions. I just have a few based on the status, the NDA status. Just wondering what the status currently is, and really around, have you received any unusual requests for additional information from the FDA since the original submission?
Alessandro?
Yes. No, at the moment, all the requests that we receive from FDA are, I can say, the standard one. Are just some additional requests on manufacturing, CMC, or preclinical data, but absolutely no particular request. And I would like to underline that during the mid-cycle meeting that we had on February 12th, no substantial issues came out part of the dossier. No substantial issue in CMC, no in preclinical, no in clinical part of the dossier. So at the moment, we are quite confident that no major issue there are in our dossier. And we are waiting for the light cycle meeting at the end of April for the confirmation of this of our feeling.
Okay, that's good to hear. And it looks like you did a lot of commercial outlining in this presentation as well. And I'm just wondering if you've advanced into any labeling discussions with the FDA as well.
We have not.
No, we have not. The labeling discussion will start at the beginning of May, according with the timeline that FDA gave us at the beginning, and it was confirmed during the mid-cycle meeting.
Okay, perfect. Good to hear. Thank you guys for answering all the questions. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Philippa Gardner from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Hi there. I have two questions, if I could, please, just on Winlevi and the FDA review. So firstly, I was wondering, do you yet know if you are likely to have an advisory committee meeting? And then secondly, I noticed in the annual report that the manufacturing inspection that was supposed to happen in March has been delayed because of the restriction. So do you have any sort of idea as to when that now may take place? Do you think that will still happen within a timely manner to stick to the original PDUFA date? Thank you.
Alessandro.
Yeah, for the inspection to the manufacturing plant, now is planned the first week of May. They postponed from the end of February to the first week of May. And for the other question concerning the advisory board, the meeting, during the mid-cycle meeting, they said that at the moment there are no reasons for having such kind of meeting. No reason to have deeply discussion on specific issue, and particularly no reason to have specific discussion concerning the safety profile of the drug.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Nicholas Gordon from Logistable Limited. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for such an extensive presentation. Just two questions from me. The first one is, obviously, we've got a pretty difficult time at the moment in terms of not only financial markets, but you've got to do this raising by May, it seems. Do you have an idea when you probably have more details? Is it a couple of days, a couple of weeks, pre-Easter? And then the second question is around the potential for a strategic partner that you outlined that you would have to consider that versus is it a good deal for shareholders? Have you got some basic line in the sands or where you feel that a deal will not be in shareholders' interests vis-a-vis a price range? I don't want a specific sort of number, but where do you think you'd certainly walk away if someone offered a certain price? Thank you very much.
Chris,
Diana, should I take those?
Or do you can take the raising by May. I'll take the strategic partner question.
Okay. Well, the raising side, as I mentioned briefly, is we are currently writing the prospectus and want to have the prospectus finalized in such a way that we can then basically wait upon the occurrence of the market, more or less, to be where it should be. But we're targeting, in order to be cautious, we're targeting it towards the very end of May, and we will be announcing, basically, according to Italian law, you know, there is the ordinary shareholders meeting and the extraordinary shareholders meeting, and these will be a month apart, more or less, with the extraordinary shareholders meeting planned to be taking place towards the end of May, and that will then be approving the quote-unquote capital increase for recapitalization purposes as an extraordinary event. So this would mean that the transaction would be happening in the first 2 weeks or something like that of June. And we hope that by then the markets will have somehow stabilized. But even if they don't, we will do the transaction, right? From Cosmo's perspective, if necessary, Cosmo would be the only subscriber if nobody else wants to participate.
Okay, understood.
All right, and then as it relates to a strategic partner, we understand very clearly the value of our drugs. We've done substantial amount of market research that I tried to share with you today that elucidates not only the potential prescription volume over time, but also the market access or the payer landscape and the coverage and pricing for our drug. So that allows us to have a very clear understanding of the primary value driver of the company. And it is, and we understand clearly what the cost would be for, and the opportunity would be for us to launch the product on our own. So we would view any opportunity or any valuation for a strategic partnership with that in mind. So that's kind of how we look at it. I'm certainly not going to be giving any dollar value range in this call or publicly, but we clearly understand what is likely to be the value of Winlevi and Breezula, certainly.
And will that be the main driver when it comes to strategic versus internal, if you can't get the right value?
Well, there'll be lots of considerations as there always is in transactions, value tends to be a main driver.
Thanks.
The next question comes from Paul Verbraeken from Research Partners. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Just one financial question. You have a cash burn of about 1 million per month or a bit more. Does that mean that you will already draw a bit more from the Cosmo facility in the first half? And if so, how much do you think?
Marco, do you want to make a statement on that, on the details?
Yeah. At the end of the year, we drawn 10 million, and now in the first three months, 2.5 million from the facility.
Okay, and that means that you will probably draw some more in Q2, or is that going to be it?
No, we're going to draw more until we make the capital raise.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Next question comes from Barbara Blah from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hello, thanks for taking my question. I have one question to clarify the patent life, because I thought that the patent loss of exclusivity is in 2030, but I saw in the annual report that the patents expire 2028. Could you give some clarity on this issue, please?
Luigi, can you make a comment on that?
Yes, the patent covering the cream, the Winlevi cream, is expiring 2028, but some term adjustments are awaited for the patent office. Of course, this don't change radically the situation, but could adjust. For the solution, we have a much longer life in terms of exclusivity, that if I remember well, is over 2030.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. And then quick other question on the second round of financing. Does this depend on the whether you do this strategic transaction for Winlevi or whether you go on the market by yourself?
Of course, you know, in principle, from a practical perspective, I think the critical, one of the critical events for both any potential strategic as well as for a fundraising is going to be the approval of the drug. And we will then see, right, where we stand. If there's no satisfactory strategic transaction, then we will proceed with preparations for the second capital raise.
Okay, and the second capital raise, this will be on equity market or like with royalty banks?
No, that will be on the equity market. Mm-hmm. Well, potentially it could be a mixture, but it depends. But yeah.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Next question comes from Bodiarjan Rupen from Finanz und Wirtschaft. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for having my question. Can you give us some indication about the size of this second offering if you will go ahead?
If we look at what is, we have the authorization to issue 3 million shares, right, from our shareholders. And if we issue 750,000 shares now or more or less to that tune or a bit less, then we have 2.2 million shares left. And then theoretically, but that's, of course, there's a lot of ifs and buts and whens, but if the share price hopefully will be substantially better than it is now, then that would give us the opportunity of raising to the tune of 100 million, meaning just
okay.
The remaining shares that are authorized.
Hmm. Okay, thanks a lot.
Madam, gentlemen, so far there are no more questions.
Okay, well, thanks all for participating in our call today. We appreciate your interest and support of Cassiopeia, and we wish you, again, you and your families, safety and peace during these tumultuous times. Thank you very much.